School Student Success Programs in Mira's Education. I'm Greg Haggard, Chairman of the DAO Board, and I will facilitate the meeting. Let's take the roll first. When I call your name, please provide the group a brief introduction for the benefit of new members and members of the public. So Tim Morton.
Tim Morton, CEO of Westland Financial Services and board member of DAO Charter.
Laura Barrero.
Laura Barrero, parent representative board member, director of acquisitions, dispositions, and leasing at the Gildred Companies.
And Greg Haggard, chairman. So we're establishing a quorum. Do I have a motion for approval of item 1.3?
Motion to approve. It's Tim Morton.
Laura Barrero, I second the motion.
Okay, and I'll be calling for the vote. Laura Barrero.
Laura Barrero, aye.
Tim Morton.
Tim Morton, aye.
And Greg Haggard is aye. That passes unanimously. Len, would you please call the roll for student success programs?
I will. Myself, chairman. Same, if you would, just a quick introduction. Scott Barton.
SSP board member, retired principal at the preschool.
Well, David Crean.
David Crean. Managing partner, Objective Capital Partners, investment banking, and board member for SSP.
Okay. Jane Gorowski. I know she's there.
She is muted, but I see her online.
Yeah. Okay, Eric Schweinfutter.
Also muted.
Sorry, guys. Eric Schweinfurter, Apex Contracting and Restoration, board member, Student Success Program.
Great. Now, I see we have established a quorum. Do I have a motion to approve item 1.3?
Motion to approve, David Crean.
Second. Who is the second?
Eric Schweinfurter.
Okay, thank you. We now conduct a vote via roll call. Myself, aye. Scott?
Aye.
David?
Aye.
Jane?
Aye.
There we go. Eric?
Aye.
Passes unanimously. Debbie, would you please call for Mira's?
Yes, I will. My name is Debbie Giaquinta, chair of the Mira's board. Denise Shields?
Aye.
Okay, you want to give a brief introduction?
I'm sorry, in a few minutes. My computer was acting up. Denise Shields on the board serving for Mira's.
Thank you. Aaron Smith?
Aaron Smith, Mira's board member and Mira's learning lead.
Thank you. We have establishment of a quorum. Do I have a motion for approval of item 1.3?
This is Aaron. I make a motion to approve.
Denise will second.
All right. We will conduct the voting via roll call. Debbie Giaquinta, aye. Denise Shields?
Aye.
You said aye?
I said aye.
Okay, sorry. And Aaron Smith?
Aye.
Motion passes.
Thank you. We are now at 1.4, the Pledge of Allegiance. I'll guide us through that. If we'd all please stand for the Pledge of Allegiance. And ready, begin.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America
and to the Republic for which it stands,
one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you very much. 1.5, approval of the agenda. Do I have a motion? Approval of item 1.5.
Laura Barrero, I make a motion to approve the agenda.
Tim Morton, second.
Thank you. I'll call for the vote. Laura?
Laura Barrero, aye.
Tim Morton?
Aye.
And Greg Haggard is aye. That passes unanimously. Len, would you please conduct item 1.5?
Sure. Item 1.5 is the approval of the agenda. Do I have a motion for the approval of item 1.5 with recommendations? Any recommendations, if there are, from Mary?
So moved. Barton?
Very well.
David Crean, second.
Very well. Conduct a roll call for vote. Myself, aye. Scott?
Aye.
David?
Aye.
Jane?
Aye.
Eric?
Aye.
Debbie, will you please conduct premieres?
Yes, I will. Approval of the agenda. Do I have a motion for approval of item 1.5?
This is Aaron Smith. I'll make a motion to approve item 1.5.
Thank
you. This is Denise Shields, and I will second that motion.
All right, and we will vote via roll call. Debbie Giaquinta, aye. Denise Shields?
Aye.
Aaron Smith?
Aye.
Motion passes.
Thank you. So moving on to 2.0, public comment. If you would like to participate in public comment, please complete a speaker card and submit it to staff. Public comment for items of interest to the public and within the scope of Student Success Programs Board non-agenda shall be no longer than 2 minutes. Public comment for agenda items shall be no longer than 3 minutes. Speakers may not yield time. In accordance with the Brown Act, no discussion or action may occur at this time, but it is the board's prerogative to respond or give direction to staff. All public comment will be heard at this point in the agenda as ordered below. Each agenda item shall be commented on. Each agenda item being commented on will have a maximum of 20 minutes allotted, and each non-agenda item will have a maximum of 10 minutes allotted. If necessary, the board chair may equivalently decrease the time for each speaker in order to stay within the allotted maximum. 2.1, non-agenda public comment. This is an opportunity for members of the public to speak to the board on items not on the agenda. Speakers will be limited to 2 minutes per speaker. This item is limited to 20 minutes unless otherwise modified by the chairperson. Speakers may not yield their time. Are there any public comments on items not on the agenda? Hearing none, I might ask those that are not speaking to go on mute, please. Hearing none, we are at 2.2, agenda public comment. This is an opportunity for members of the public to speak to the board on items that appear on the agenda. Speakers will be limited to 3 minutes per speaker, and this item is limited to 20 minutes unless otherwise modified by the chairperson. Speakers may not yield their time. Are there any public comments on agenda items? Hearing none. 3.0, board workshop. 3.1, Brown Act training. So 3.1.1, Wayne Strumpfer from the Young, Mini, and Core law firm will provide training to the board regarding the Brown Act, compliance with SB 126 and the governor's executive order N2920. So Wayne.
Hello, everyone. My name is Wayne Strumpfer. I'm with Young, Mini, and Core, as was mentioned. Happy to be with you today. I'm trying to share my screen. What, do you see it or no?
I see Melanie McAlpin.
Oh, okay. Okay, hold on a second. Sorry about this technical difficulty. Okay, let me try it. That's interesting. I've got.
You have a dual screen?
Yeah, I've got. Well, I've got one screen up, and now it won't let me share. Okay, hold on. Share content. I have not had this problem before. How does that look? Does that show PowerPoint?
Yes.
That works.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much. I don't know what happened there. Thank you for joining. Usually I train at most board meetings, but it's nice to be here this morning. I don't know how many of you are political junkies and were up until 4 in the morning, but glad you all could join this morning. I'm going to start off, I'm going to try to go through this and be done by 9:30 for you all. And I know many of you have had this training before. And it's clear to me just from watching the first 10 or 15 minutes that you're a sophisticated group who knows how to hold a board meeting. So pleasure to be with all of you today. And most of this may be review. But if you have any questions as we go through this, because I will talk about a few new laws and a couple new things that are going on, please feel free just to interrupt me and ask me the question as we're going, and I'm happy to engage and have conversation as we go. First off today, we're going to talk briefly about what was SB 126 last year that now became Education Code 47604.1 as of January 1st, 2020, and it has a number of changes for boards and board meetings. The number one thing that it did, the thing that I think got it passed, is that it made it expressly clear in the law that charter schools must comply with the Public Records Act, the Government Code 1090, the Brown Act, and the Political Reform Act. Previously, there was some questions as to whether charter schools did have to follow these public agency laws because of the Charter School Act and what it included and didn't include. But now it's clear under the Education Code that charter schools must follow all of these public laws. Another thing that 47604.1 did is give us some direction in the Brown Act that says you will have your meetings in your public agency's jurisdiction. For most public agencies, if you're a county public agency, obviously your jurisdiction is the county. If you're a state public agency, obviously your jurisdiction is the state. But there was always that question about charter schools, right? What is the charter school jurisdiction? Is it the district's jurisdiction? Is it the state? Is it the county? Well, 47604.1 cleared that up, kind of. It gave a number of different scenarios for different types of school boards. So if you are a school board that oversees a single charter or multiple charter schools in the same county, you shall meet within the boundaries of the county of where your charter school or schools are located. You must meet in that county. If you are a board that has one non-classroom-based charter school that does not have a facility or operates one or more resource centers, you shall meet in the boundary of the county where the greatest number of pupils who are enrolled in the charter school reside. So that's a little tricky in the sense of, you know, some schools are going, well, we have at this school, and that's the most students of any school, so therefore that's where we have our board meeting. That's not necessarily the rule. The rule is where those students reside, where they live. So you will have wherever the majority of your students reside is where you must have your board meetings in that county. A board that manages two or more charter schools that are not located in the same county, which is true for two of you. So if you have more than one school in more than one county, you shall meet within the physical boundaries of the county, again, where the greatest number of pupils enrolled reside, where they live. These boards, the ones that have more than one school in more than one county, must audio record, video record, or both all of your meetings and post those recordings on your internet website of the charter school. Boards operating more than one school must establish two-way teleconference location at each school site and each resource center. So that means that you have to have someone, each time you have your board meeting, you must have someone at your other school sites, at least with a smartphone, where if someone wants to come to that school, this is during normal times right now, we're all virtual, but when we get back to somewhat normalcy, when you have board meetings, you're going to have people at the other school sites, at least with a smartphone, where people can access, watch the meeting, public comment during the meeting, and that kind of thing. 47604.1 also allows employees of the charter school to be on the charter school board, as long as they do not vote or influence the vote on matters uniquely affecting that member's employment. We still have concerns about the language of that law. We still recommend not having employees on your board. And if there is any interest in that, we'd love to talk to you first before you do it. It is a little bit of a minefield for conflicts of interest. And we're, as council, we're concerned about that. So that's 47604.1, the new changes in the law. Let's talk about the Brown Act a little bit. The purpose of the Brown Act is this, is that you are board members of public schools with public students, and you receive public funds, you spend public funds, therefore the public gets to know what you're doing. They get to know how you vote. Not only do they get to know how you vote, but they also get to know what you're thinking as you're voting, right? When you have conversation and discuss as a group, the public gets to hear it if they so choose to. You have to have it open. So what is a meeting? Because under the Brown Act, if you have a meeting, you must agendize it and you must notice it to the public. So under the Brown Act, a meeting is defined simply as this, a majority of the board talking about school business. So if you have a board of three or five, let's use five as an example. If two of you go out for coffee at Starbucks to talk about the agenda that's on the next board meeting, that's not a problem. It's a minority of the board, and you can do that. You can talk about school business. But if a third person joins you, now you've created a meeting as it's defined under the Brown Act, right? You have three of the five, and it's considered a meeting, and you would need to agendize that and notice it. For small boards, this is important, right? If you only have three members on your board, it means you can't talk to each other about school business, because as soon as you do, it is a meeting, and if you haven't noticed it, you violated the Brown Act. Now, a majority of you can get together as long as you're not talking about school business. So we'll talk about a little bit more about that in a moment. I also want to mention board committees, that if you have committees that are created by the board, they must also follow the Brown Act. The one exception of this rule is if you have a committee that is temporary and advisory only and is made up of board members and only a minority of board members. Give you a quick example. Let's say that a parent raises an issue with the board, a complaint about one of the charter schools, and you decide, well, let's at least look into it. We'd like to have, you know, if you have a five-member board, we'd like to have two members look into this and report back to us next month in an advisory nature, right? So in that situation, you've got a minority of the board, only board members on that committee. It's temporary. They've been asked only for a month to look into it, and it's advisory only. You're just asking them to give you some advice on what the issue may be. That's the only exception to the rule. Otherwise, board committees that are made up of parents or have parents on them or have teachers on them or are permanent in nature must follow the Brown Act. Now, there are a couple of exceptions to the rule I just gave you about a majority of you being together and talking about school business. The biggest exception is, let's say that your district or county or state is hearing your renewal for your charter, and all of you want to attend that board meeting, and you want to speak during public comment on to support your charter school. You can do that without posting an agenda and noticing it. The rule in that specific situation where you're going to another public agency's meeting is that you can piggyback off of their notice and their agenda, because on their agenda, it's going to say your charter school is being renewed and there's going to be public comment. So that notice is sufficient under the Brown Act for you. When you go to public conferences or you have social or ceremonial gatherings, such as fundraisers or graduations, you can all attend those. And for instance, at graduations, maybe all of you are going to sit together, but be very careful. I call this sort of the anti-social law. You don't want to really talk to each other during these types of events. Stay clear of each other during fundraisers, go out and mingle separately, and don't talk about school business with each other. That's the big rule. I mean, all five of you could get together and have a party for, you know, for the Super Bowl or something. As long as you never talk about school business, that's fine. It's not considered a meeting under the Brown Act. The problem is, if all of you are together, what do you have in common? You have the school in common, right? So it's likely you're going to talk about school business. And as soon as you do, you're going to have a problem under the Brown Act. One last thing to mention about this is I see this often in in-person meetings, and that is at the end of the meeting, you adjourn, and then the board walks out to the parking lot, and a majority of them walk over and stand by somebody's car and start talking about the board meeting or start talking about school business. You've adjourned your meeting. So going out into the parking lot and continuing conversation about school business is actually a violation of the Brown Act, because a majority of you are there and you're talking about school business outside of a meeting. So be careful not to do that. Again, the kind of anti-social part of the Brown Act. After you adjourn, go your separate ways. Serial meetings are another issue that come up sometimes, kind of a tricky way to violate the Brown Act. And that is when a majority of board members outside the meeting are having conversation about school business. And I'll give you the two examples. One is the hub and one is the chain. The hub is the wheel there. This happens mostly with emails. So for instance, let's say that you have read an article in the New York Times or the LA Times about charter schools. that you think would be interesting for your school, and you want to share it with your board members. So you type up an email and say, hey, I think this is a really good article. I think we need to talk about this. There's, you know, several issues here with our school, and this article kind of addresses those things. And then you send it out to your other board members. You're in the center of that wheel there. You're in the spoke, and you're sending it out to the others. When you're sending out an email to all the other board members and you're talking about school business, you're having a meeting, right? Because remember, a meeting is a majority of the board talking about school business. It doesn't have to be verbal. It can be via email as well or text. So you should not be doing that. If you have something you want to share with other board members that has to do with school business, you need to give it to Lynn or to Mary or one of their administrative assistants, to send out to the rest of the board, right? Because non-board members can't violate the Brown Act. Only board members can. So that's what you want to do. You want to avoid sending out emails to each other talking about school business. Now, if you want to just simply, you know, if you're the chair and you want to check everyone's availability for a special meeting, that's not considered school business, that's considered board business. So if you want to say, hey, everyone, are you available Thursday at 6 o'clock for a special board meeting? That's fine. What you don't want to do is then respond, yes, what is it about? Are we going to talk about this thing and this thing and this thing about school business? Now you've created a meeting. But as long as you're just talking about dates and times for meetings, that kind of thing, that would not be a violation. The other example is the chain, and that's when you have, let's say you have five board members, and two of you go out for breakfast, talk about, let's say the next agenda has next year's school budget on it. And so two of you get together at Starbucks, you talk about it, you know, board member A and board member B say, you know, gosh, how are you going to vote? I think I'm going to vote for it. I'm a little concerned about this. I'd like to know more information about that. And then you leave, and that's fine, right? Two of you out of five, not a problem. But then let's say board member B goes and has lunch with board member C and says, oh, hey, I had breakfast with board member A this morning, and they're going to vote this way on the budget, and they had this idea. What do you think? Now board member B has brought in board member A along with board member C, creating a majority of the board. So that's how the chain happens, and you end up, again, having a meeting because a majority number of board members know what others are going to vote. So you've got to be very careful to not do that. And again, if you have a very small board, that's one of the biggest concerns. You know, if you have a three-member board, you cannot meet with each other at Starbucks, right? Just two people would make a meeting. So you got to be careful with that. You could actually violate the Brown Act by running into each other, you know, at the grocery store and starting to talk about the school. So just be aware of that. Again, antisocial, but that's what you have to be careful of. This could come up, excuse me, in text messages, emails, social media. Be careful of posting on the same page as other board members do on, say, Facebook. If the school has a Facebook account, you want to be careful not to have a majority of you commenting on school business on the same page. That potentially is a Brown Act violation, so be careful of that as well. One thing you can do is you can talk to Mary or Lynn about any issue you may have as a board member. If you want to talk about the agenda, if there's something on there that you're not clear about and you want to contact an administrator at your school, you can do that. One-on-one, no problem at all. What they can't do is to say to you, oh yeah, hey, thanks for the call. I just had two other board members call me and tell me, and this is what they're thinking about this issue, right? They can't share that with you. But you can have one-on-one conversations with administrators without any concern of the Brown Act. Let's talk a little bit about teleconference meetings. We're going to talk about normal times, and then we're going to talk about today and the differences. But this is something for training, you know, hopefully at some point in 2021, we'll maybe get back to normal where students will be back at school. And you'll be meeting again in person. And if you do get back to that point and you want to teleconference in, let's say that one of you is on vacation or on a work trip and you need to call in or video in from your location, these are the rules you have to follow in order to do that. You must have the agenda posted at the location you are vacationing or working. So for instance, if you're on vacation, you know, at the Hilton Waikoloa in Hawaii, and you want to still go to the board meeting, you can do that. You can teleconference in, but you must post the agenda outside your hotel room or down in the lobby if they let you do that. You need to post it in a public location. And on the same side of things, your location has to be posted on the agenda, right? So typically you would have the agenda location being at the school or whatever the site is of your board meeting. You would also then add teleconference location, Waikoloa Hilton, Waikoloa Beach, Hawaii. So you need to have that location on the agenda. All votes must be taken by roll call, which is still actually the one rule here that was not waived by the executive order that we're going to talk about in a minute. And then each teleconference location must be accessible to the public. In other words, it must be ADA compliant. If you want a teleconference from home, if you've got stairs and no ramp, you cannot do that. If you're staying at a resort or an Airbnb that is not ADA compliant, you cannot teleconference from that location. Members of the public must be able to hear and have access to the meeting. That means that if you're on vacation at the Hilton and someone knocks at your door in a couple minutes before 6 o'clock, before your meeting, and they say, hey, I saw the agenda out here and this looks interesting, I'd like to listen to the board meeting, you have to let them into your room to attend the board meeting. Same thing happens at home if you're teleconferencing from home. If someone wants to access the meeting from your location, they get to do that. Which is one reason not to teleconference from home. There are several reasons, but that's one of them. And then the final rule is a quorum of the board must participate from within the county of where the charter school is located, or in some of your cases, where the majority of students live, right? Whatever your county is, where you can have board meetings, a majority of the board must be in that county. You all could be calling in, but you have to, at least a majority of you have to be in that county. But for right now, governor's executive order in 2920 was signed, I think it was March 17th or 18th. He was fast and furious in those days, doing four or five executive orders a day. And this one addressed public agency board meetings under the Brown Act. And what it said was, we are waiving most of those rules that we just talked about. In regards to teleconferencing, the agenda does not need to provide notice of each location, and the agendas do not need to be posted at those locations, right? This really was to allow you all to teleconference from home without losing the privacy, right, of giving up your address or having people come in your house, and to allow it to be truly a virtual meeting. So this was the idea behind it. So he waived those requirements during this time. He also waived the need to have a quorum of the board located within the charter school jurisdiction, understanding home may be outside of counties of where the schools are, and that people, he was obviously at that point encouraging people not to travel or not to go outside their home. Governing board members may participate in teleconference meetings from places that are not publicly accessible. Again, giving you advantages to be able to teleconference from home and not worry about whether you have a ramp or not if you've got stairs. So those were the ideas behind the executive order, and those are the requirements or the waivers of the executive order. Governor Newsom said you can take advantage of those flexibilities as long as the public has access either by internet or telephone to the board meeting. So it would mean that for each of your board meetings, you must on your agenda post either a telephone number where people can listen to your board meetings, or Zoom or GoToMeetings or whatever platform you're using to allow the public to access your board meetings. And then also the public comment issue, you must allow the public to give public comment in some electronic form. So that could be either via email or on your meetings virtually or by phone. And so some people have asked, when is this order rescinded? And there is no expiration date on it. The governor will actually have to actively rescind it. I don't see that happening anytime soon. I think it won't happen until most students are back at school, likely when we have a vaccine. And so I see virtual meetings in our future for at least the next 3 to 6 months being optimistic, I guess, right? Be aware of that. This does not mean that you have to meet virtually if your county, if your county's health directives allow for meetings, you can. Just be aware, though, if your directives say no more than 10 people in a room, you may have a limitation there that could violate the Brown Act, right? If 10 or 12 parents decide to show up at your board meeting and you cannot let them in because of a health directive, that is going to be a problem with the Brown Act. You're going to have to make it accessible to those parents. So I do recommend for the time being continue to do virtual meetings, and you all seem to have it down pretty well. So virtual meetings is the best approach until this order is rescinded.
And Wayne, may I ask you a question?
Yes, please.
Can we anticipate that normalcy might include the option for all board members to choose whether they want to come in person or whether they want to call in remotely, not call in necessarily, but Zoom in remotely?
Yeah, for sure. As long as this order is in effect and the charter schools themselves decide, well, because of the county health order, we're able to be in person, those charter schools should give the option to each board member to either come in person or do it virtually. Yeah. No doubt about it. Yeah. And I like I said, I just don't see the governor rescinding this order anytime soon. And in fact, I from my old days when I worked for the state of California and did some legislative work, some of my friends are saying that there's talk at the Capitol that this executive order, there may be some law changes this coming year, some bills to actually make it easier for people to teleconference, even when things are normal. Yes. So some of these waivers may actually become law. Don't know yet. I'm not saying they are, but it's something to look for to see if things change. Because I think it's gone very well, right?
We have very high-level board members with busy schedules, and some live a distance away. So it might be an option that they might really choose to take advantage of. So please keep us abreast of that if by some fact this goes away in 6 months, which I doubt. But it might be something we consider.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. And we will keep everyone in the loop with our legal advice and you know, our when we mail out information, we certainly will let everyone know.
Right. And incidentally, Denise has her little virtual hand up. I don't know if she has a question.
Thank you. That was a few minutes ago. And you just addressed it. My question was in the beginning of the presentation, you were referring to the mandatory presence in the county. And I was saying even during COVID, and you just addressed it. So thank you.
Oh, sure. Yeah. Yeah. And sorry, because I've got my screen up, I can't see the hand. So please just verbally interrupt me. It's not rude. It's fine.
Thank you.
All right. Briefly, I want to just talk about a law that came in a few years ago for boards, just to be aware of this, executive compensation. When you approve your CEO or executive director's compensation, there are several rules involved. This came from a case some of you may remember being done in Southern California. It was in the city of Bell, where a city manager gave himself a $600,000 or $700,000 raise 1 year before he retired so that he could boost up his pension. And he got caught, ended up going to prison. One of the things that came out of that was the legislature said, hey, for public agencies, if you're going to give raises to your top administrative folks, the people who report to the board, you must do it publicly. You cannot do it, you know, in private. And the rules are this: you must, when you're talking about a contract or an increase in salary or any kind of compensation, executives that report directly to your board, it must be done in a regular meeting, not in a special meeting. And it must be announced prior to final action, which is prior to voting on the contract to approve. Your chair or someone on the board must give a summary of the salary, the fringe benefits, and any other type of payment that is in the contract. Typically, what we recommend is, you know, vacation time, sick leave, salary, and health benefits. That has to be publicly announced. And then final action, when you actually vote on the contract, must be done in open session as well. So let's talk a little bit about notice requirements. The general rule is that you must give a brief description of each item that you're going to discuss or vote on. The law actually says no more than 20 words, so you don't have to make a, you know, a novel, a short story about it. But you do have to give enough information to where a member of the public who doesn't know much about your school understands what you're doing. So the example I like to give is, you know, if you just post on your agenda item number 4, budget. You know, if I'm looking at your agenda as a member of the public and not knowing much about your school, I don't know if you're talking about, are you going to review last year's budget? Are you looking at the current year-to-date budget? Are you looking at next year's budget? I don't know what budget. Budget isn't enough information for me. But just adding 6 or 7 words does the trick, right? If you say discussion and vote on the 2021 school year budget, you've added, what is that, 7 words, and I now know exactly what you're going to talk about. Right. So that's what you want to do, is you want to give at least enough definition for each board item, meeting item, for people to understand what you're doing, and avoid acronyms. In charter school world and in education, we love our acronyms, but members of the public may not understand what LCAP is. So you need to spell it out so people understand it. In your agendas, you also want to include a couple of blurbs. One, these are now both regulations, so they're the rules. One is you need to have a little blurb on how to request disability-related accommodation. And the other one is you have to have a little blurb that tells people where they can go to inspect or receive documents that are given to the board as board materials. So if someone wants to get them before the board meeting during normal times, you would say, you know, somewhere in your agenda, board materials are available at the front desk of the school or wherever it is you want to have them available. You can also post them online if you want to avoid that whole situation, up to you. So real quickly, I think most of you know this, but for notice and agendas, for a regular meeting, you must give notice at least 72 hours in advance. For a special meeting, 24 hours in advance. And for an emergency meeting, 1 hour in advance. Emergency meetings are to be avoided at most almost all costs. But do remember for special meeting and for regular meeting, those time requirements. Where to post? Physically at a publicly accessible location within the jurisdiction of your school. In other words, your school site, right? That's what I always recommend, is at each school site or at each facility, post your agenda, because that's where your stakeholders are going to be. And that's what you're trying to do, is get to your stakeholders. And then also on your website, it's been several years now, the rule is you have to post your agenda on your website. But beginning last year, a new law took effect that says not only do you have to post it on your website, but you have to post it on your home page of your website. And it has to be a prominent direct link to the agenda on the home page. So home page of your website, I, as a member of the public, should go to it and see somewhere a link that says board meeting November 4th, 2020, and I click on that and there's the agenda. So it's a direct link, it's on the home page, and it only takes me one click and I'm there. So that's the new rule that's in effect, so make sure you do that. The exceptions to notice requirement is an emergency situation. So if something comes up in less than a day that is considered an emergency that the board must vote on, and it cannot wait for 24 hours to have a special meeting, you can vote on a 2/3 basis if the board agrees that the item must have immediate action and that the action came to the attention to the charter school after the agenda was posted. You can add an item to your agenda. That is clearly not recommended by us or any other lawyer, because the whole idea of the Brown Act, right, is to give notice to the public. And in the past, where we have seen, for lack of a better word, shenanigans by boards or by individuals where they've caused problems and financial issues for charter schools, it's usually done in a sneaky way. It's usually done in, oh, we have an emergency item we have to put on, so no one gets the notice and then something's done. So authorizers are very leery of that, and you should be also. If you have something that comes up that is, you know, kind of an emergency, if you can wait 24 hours and call a special meeting, it's much better to do that than to change your agenda at the last moment. Your authorizer is going to raise their eyebrows at that and be very concerned. So be careful of doing that. Rights of the public, obviously they have right to access and then participation, as we talked a little bit about before. Oral testimony at meetings, you mentioned it in your first part of the board meeting time limits. They have up to 3 minutes normally, and the courts have found that to be okay within the Brown Act if you limit people to no more than 3 minutes. There's been one court decision that said up to 2 minutes is okay as long as you put on the record why that the meeting is going to go long, or there's a lot of people to speak, or there's some reason why you're going to limit people only to 2 minutes. You have to put that on the record. Otherwise, the 3 minute limit is appropriate at any time. And also the Brown Act says for total time, it's a reasonable amount of time. And that, of course, is very vague, and it leaves it kind of up to you. I would say if you know that you're going to have, you know, something happens that is controversial at your school and there's 30 parents who want to speak, to limit them to 10 minutes total is not going to work, right? That's not going to be considered reasonable. But maybe, you know, limiting them to 30 minutes would be. So it's kind of case by case, but just be aware of that. It needs to be reasonable. Disruptive speakers, you can, during these times, you can mute them or kick them out of your meeting. In real time, in normal times, you can kick them out of your meeting physically. But be careful what disruptive means. The courts have found, there was a case about 10 years ago where a high school kid attended a school board meeting and spoke during public comment. At the end of his comment, he gave the Nazi salute to the chairman, and the chairman kicked him out of the meeting. And the kid sued and said under the Brown Act, they violated his right to be at the meeting. The Court of Appeals actually sided with the kid and said that 5 seconds of rude behavior does not equal disruptive behavior. So what disruptive means is if someone is causing you not to be able to conduct your business, if someone continues to talk, or if someone goes to your meeting and brings drums or a bugle or something and keeps playing and you can't have conversation and you can't vote, then that's disruptive and you can kick them out. During these times, virtual times, I think, you know, we've heard stories of members of the public putting something inappropriate on their portrait picture, right? Or saying inappropriate things. I think the courts, if you were sued, I think the courts would be very sympathetic during this time. So if you have something that is inappropriate, if someone is posting something inappropriate, video-wise, I think you can kick them out of the meeting. I wouldn't have a problem with that. People can audio record and video record your meetings if they want to. They can put you on their YouTube live channel if they want to. You can't stop them. You cannot give limitations on conditions for public attendance. In other words, you can't have a board meeting that's really only for the parents or only for the employees. It's got to be always open to members of the public. And you cannot require people to sign in to your meetings. You can ask them to, but you can't require it. If someone wants to come to your meeting and not give you their name and just sit there and listen, they have a right to do that as a member of the public. You also must have ADA compliant facilities wherever you're meeting, which is if you meet at the school or at certain locations, you know, the headquarters of your school, you're fine. But just be aware of that if you ever have a retreat and you want to go someplace kind of fun for a retreat, just make sure it's ADA compliant. And then also at your board meetings, you must have the availability of agendas and public writings to people who show up to your meetings. Doesn't mean you have to print out 10 copies every meeting just in case somebody shows up. But it does mean that if somebody does show up to one of your meetings, that somebody, you have somebody who can run over and make copies of the agenda and the materials and bring it back and give it to the member of the public. One thing to note with public comment is with non-agenda items, board members cannot, and I heard you mention this also at the beginning of the board meeting, so that was good. You've got to be careful of non-agenda item. You cannot start having a discussion about something that someone raises that's not on the agenda, and that's because of the Brown Act, right? You notice what you're going to talk about. And if a member of the public brings up an issue that's not on the agenda, you're really limited. You can't start having a substantial conversation about that. You can ask clarifying questions if you want to that person. You can ask that this item be placed on the agenda for next month so that you then can talk about it. But you cannot have a major conversation about non-agenda items. And it's good to let the public know that ahead of time, because sometimes I've been at board meetings that have been very awkward where a member of the public will for 3 minutes go on about something that's really important to them. That's a non-agenda item. And at the end, the board just looks at them because they know they can't say anything. And that member of the public feels like, did you hear me? Did I, you know, no one listened? You know, they feel frustrated. So it's always good to let the member of the public know. Thank you very much. As we noted, the Brown Act keeps us from being able to respond to you right now, but we did hear you and we appreciate that. On the other hand, if it's an agenda item and someone has public comment on it, you can go to town. You can ask them questions. You can have full conversation because that item is on the agenda. So it's been noticed and you can. There's no limitation in your discussion with the public on those items. Closed session, when you can kick out members of the public and have private meetings. Pending and anticipated litigation, if you're having conference with legal counsel. Obviously, if you're being sued or you're suing or you think you may be sued or you think you may want to sue, you can have a conversation with legal counsel and do that in closed session. Pupil discipline cases under the education code, those are closed session unless the parent or the student asks for them to be in open session, then they have a right to have them heard in open session. Personnel actions, whether it be dismissal, discipline, employment, evaluation, appointment, those issues can be done in closed session. Now, I remember a little while ago I mentioned that when you give a new contract to your top executives, that has to be done in public, during public. That's true. What we're talking about here is, let's say you want to do an evaluation before you make the final decision on the contract. The evaluation part can be done in closed session. So, and then if you're dealing with an employee who you are disciplining or dismissing, and you're doing it based on specific complaints or specific charges made, that employee has a right to have 24-hour notice that you are going to be doing that. So I'm not talking about a general evaluation. I'm talking about if someone specifically complains about an employee and you're going to discuss it as a board, you have to let that person know that you don't know that you are going to be discussing specific complaints or charges against them in closed session. That person then has a right to say, I want this in open session if they want to do that. But it doesn't mean that they have a right to be in closed session. That's up to you whether you want to let them in or not. If you have real estate negotiations on leases or purchasing facilities, those can be done in closed session. Labor negotiations, if you have union, if you are negotiating employees, that can be done in closed session. And then this last one is fairly new. It's kind of a sign of the times for public security purposes. So for instance, if you know, if your learning center, if you want to have a live shooter process or procedure prepared for your employees, you can bring in law enforcement to help you create that process. And you can do that in closed session so that they can discuss with you what are their concerns, you know, what are the strengths and weaknesses of the building and that kind of thing. That can be done in closed session if you're talking about school security. For closed session, remember that the agenda language for closed session items is found in Government Code 54954.5. That is a great code section because you can just cut and paste from that and put it onto your agenda. And if you do that, you will not violate the Brown Act. It says it right on it. So anytime you have a closed session item, make sure you use the language that's in this code section. Prior to going into closed session, the board must make a public announcement of the reasons why you're going into closed session. And really what that amounts to is just reading the agenda item for it. That's sufficient. And then just remember, you have to allow the public to have the opportunity to comment on closed session items, just like they have a right to comment on open session items as well. After closed session, you must report out any action taken in closed session. So this is always a good reminder, is everything said and done in closed session is confidential, cannot be shared with anyone, can't share it with your spouse, your friends, your kids, anyone, except if you take a vote. If you take a vote, which is action, you do have to report that out after you go out of closed session back into open session. You need to immediately say the board voted to take this action, right? So for example, if you have a lawsuit going on with someone and I'm in closed session with you as your attorney, As we talked about, that's a closed session exception. And I say to you, hey, this case could settle for $10,000. Do you guys want to settle it for that? And you agree to, what you would do is you would agree to have, give me the authority to settle the case. So then when you come out and you vote on it, and if you all voted in favor of it, then you come out of closed session into open session and say, we voted, you know, unanimously to give Wayne Strumpfer of Young, Minnie, and Core the authority to settle the lawsuit. You don't have to give the amount, right? That would kind of be the whole purpose of having closed session. But you do have to give at least general information as to what you voted on in closed session. So for enforcement of the Brown Act, if you make a mistake and you violate the Brown Act, the nice thing about it is that it's fairly easy to cure a mistake. You obviously, as a board, don't want to do that very often, because then your authorizer may kind of think you're less than professional if you're violating the Brown Act on a semi-regular basis. But if it happens, and it can happen, you know, we had a client who, you know, an executive director had been around forever, and they accidentally posted the wrong agenda on the website. And they posted the last month's agenda for this month's board meeting and never changed it. And that's a Brown Act violation, because no one noticed it, the proper agenda on the website. So if a mistake happens, what often occurs is that you'll get a notice of concern from your authorizer. Typically, someone will complain to your authorizer and say, voted on something that wasn't on the agenda, or they didn't post the notice correctly. You'll hear from your authorizer in a short letter that says, we have a concern that you violated the Brown Act. What you want to do is look at that complaint, what it is, look at your agenda, look at what the complaint is. You know, if they say that you didn't post it properly, go back to your internet, your website, to determine whether you did or not. And there are times where the complaint is wrong. And when that happens, what you want to do is just show proof to your authorizer why it's wrong, right? Maybe you give them your agenda and the minutes, and you say, hey, look, you know, they're claiming that we didn't properly agendize this item. Here it is. You can see in our agenda that it's on item number 3, and you can see the minutes where we discussed it. No violation. Thank you very much. On the other hand, if there's a complaint and you look into it and you realize, excuse me, uh-oh, we made a mistake, right? We violated the Brown Act. What you want to do to cure a Brown Act violation, the Brown Act says that any act taken by the board that is in violation of its act is null and void. So if you, for instance, don't notice the meeting correctly on your website, any action taken, so all the votes on contracts or anything else that you took at that board meeting that was not noticed properly, are null and void. So what you want to do is call as soon as you can, call a special meeting, get all of you together and put those items on the agenda again, all the action items. This time, make sure it's noticed correctly, and then go through them again as if you never had the meeting. Don't just say, oh, hey, we talked about these last week. Everybody say yes. Yes. OK, we're done with the meeting. You actually have to go through them because you didn't notice the meeting properly. So you have to give the public the opportunity to hear you talk again and then you vote again. So that's what you need to do to cure it. And if you get this notice of concern from the authorities, what you want to do is you want to set that public meeting up. You want to get it ready, and then you want to respond back to your authorizer and say, gosh, we made a mistake. Inadvertently, we posted the wrong agenda, but next week we have a special meeting set up. Here is the agenda for it. You can see it's already posted on our website. We have cured the problem. We have corrected it. So that shows that you are, you know, ahead of the game, and you recognize, okay, we made a mistake, but not only that, how do we correct it? We're going to correct it like this, and this is how we're going to do it right. So that's how you want to handle. Always happy to help if you ever get a complaint. Feel free to call or email me. As Lynn and Mary both know, there's several of us who can help you with Brown Act issues. One last thing I want to mention, and this is something that's come up in Southern California schools. Oops, is there a question?
Yeah, quick question. What would you do in that case with the recorded meeting that was no good?
Yeah, you would still keep it. You would, and you would, if you are legally now under the new law, have to post it, you would still post it because it was a meeting that occurred. But I think I would put on it, put a note on the website saying, you know, there was a subsequent meeting that, you know, we'd have to figure out how to word it. But I think you'd still have to post that meeting's video. because it was a meeting, right? Even though it was violation, it was a meeting. And I think under 47604.1, it doesn't have a, you know, it doesn't say Brown Act compliant meeting. It says all meetings. So, yeah. The last thing that I want to mention is, this has come up a couple of times in LA schools, and that is notice and demand for cure or cease and desist. And this is a member of the public, the DA can do it too, but you know, the DAs of counties down where you are have more interesting things to do than to worry about, you know, Brown Act violations of charter schools. So you're going to see this if you ever see it from a member of the public. And a couple of our clients have seen it down in LA, where the member of the public sends a complaint saying you violated the Brown Act. When you get something like this, do contact us, because there are specific rules under the code of what you need to do, even if you didn't violate it. And this often happens where the person sends you this and they're wrong. You didn't violate the Brown Act. They're either just sort of bothering you or they misunderstand the Brown Act. So if you get something like this, do give me a call and we can talk about how to respond and make sure that we follow the law accurately. There's three or four steps you have to take. So that's what I have for you. I'm happy to take any questions. You guys were pretty quiet, or maybe I was just talking too fast. But I'm happy to answer any questions that you may have.
I don't have any question. It's more of a comment. Thank you for providing guidance, especially given the very remote nature of what we're doing in today's world. So very, very helpful.
Thank you.
May I ask for a copy of the presentation so I can have it for ease of reference?
Yes, I think I provided it, so you can, I'm sure you can get a copy. Yeah.
Thank you.
Wayne, thank you very much.
Laura, it was sent together. It's in the electronic packet. When you receive the agenda, it was included there.
I see. It's open in front of me. Sorry about that.
Sorry. And I think on it, it has my not only my phone number, but my email address as well. So if you ever need to contact me, I'm more than happy to help.
Any other questions? That was very good. Wayne, thank you. Most of us have had this. The refresher is great and helping us, especially with the special rules during this special time. Very valuable. I really appreciate that. Unless there are any other comments, I'm going to go ahead and ask for a motion to adjourn the meeting from my board.
Laura Barrero, I make a motion to adjourn.
Tim Morton, second.
Thank you. And then calling for the vote, Laura Barrero.
Aye.
Tim Morton.
Aye.
And Greg Haggard is aye. So that passes for us. Now we've lost Len. I'm going to ask Scott Barton to do the same for his board. You would?
So I'd like to call for a vote or a call. I have a motion to adjourn the meeting.
Motion, David Green.
Second, Eric Schweinfurter.
All those in favor, Scott Barton, aye.
We're going to have David, to call aye. Them individually. Oh, sorry. Go ahead. Keep going.
David, aye.
Eric, aye.
Motion carries. Motion passes.
Very good. Thank you. And Debbie?
Yes, I'd like to make a motion to adjourn the meeting.
This is Aaron Smith. I second the motion.
Debbie, I'm sorry, you said you seconded it?
Yes. Aaron?
Okay. All right. And we'll conduct via roll call. Debbie Giaquinta votes yes. Denise Shields?
Aye.
And Aaron Smith?
Aye.
Motion passes.
Well, thank you very much. I think that does it. I really appreciate it. And we'll see you all soon.
Thank you.
Thank you.